You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 220. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. Welcome on the pod. Thursday, July 9th. We're recording Tuesday night. And, well, Steve, we were talking off air that I'm in a particularly crabby mood between the U.S. national team letting us down. It's not a soccer podcast, but, man, that stings to wait 4 years. And, yeah, I got my own gripes about Luis Lara getting called up after I stashed him for 5 weeks and dropped him 40 hours ago. So, this should be just a sprightly mood for me tonight. But jokes aside, we got a great show. Part two, really, of what we talked about last week, where we're kind of breaking out. Here's a World Cup reference. It's like the hydration break that gives you two quarters of the first half of the soccer game. This is like our hydration break line in the sand of the first quarter of the baseball season, the second quarter of the baseball season, and looking at some under the hood metrics. Going to talk about Stuff Plus, K minus BB. Going to be fantastic talking about a handful of pitcher names that either results match up or maybe not always the case, but definitely some stuff worth noting. Can't wait to get into it, man. It'll be nice to take my mind off of the things that I have not been able to stop thinking about. So good to be back. How's it going out there, man?
It's good. Yeah, we'll talk pitching to get your mind off of those things. Mm-hmm. We talked about it last week. I caught World Cup fever. I know you're a much bigger soccer fan than I am. You got the Chelsea jersey in the background.
Oh yeah,
that's probably your second biggest passion other than this, right?
Yeah, it is number two hobby probably.
So yeah, it's been fun, and I think it's juxtaposed nicely with baseball, right? It's kind of like, you know, games during the day carried us over tonight. So
there's
a lot of channels and the Discord and everything, the Pitcherless Discord and everything, with everyone talking about it. So, and it's just special because it's here, right? Like, you know, who knows if it'll be here again in like in our adult lifetime. Like, you know, it's been what, 30 years since it was in the U.S. again, right? It'd probably be around a similar time.
Word on the street again, is they're already working on a bid for, I forget if it's like 2042 or 2038. I can't think that far ahead, but we might have another shot, Steve.
So, I mean, it seems like it's been a pretty big success, at least from the inside looking out. And I know that we could spend hours, and I'm sure you can enlighten me on just how these
the corruption
are chosen and the corruption that goes into it, and why the next World Cup's in three different continents so it could be in one place for the next one. Like, I get it. But it's been fun. It's been cool. Like, the overlap with baseball was awesome. Like, I don't know if we talked about it last week, but like, you saw the Marlins games, the Red Sox games, like, mm-hmm. you know, you see the Mets getting blown out, and you see like all these fans in the outfield still dancing, like their manager getting fired. And
yeah, did you see the English Met the English guys singing like a football chant song to Michael Harris? Like they just picked him out of nowhere
I saw them like he did a jersey swap, like he gave a hat for like one of the English Team England jerseys. Like at the end of the game, he's like I got nothing for you. He's like, give me your hat, and he gave him his hat, and then the English fan gave him, I don't know,
that's great,
one of the jerseys. Is pretty cool. So it's been fun, and it's I know it's been a joke about how in America the sports are in quarters, right? Not baseball, obviously, but that's kind of how we approached it here. Same sort of process as last week with hitters, only I think we kept it a bit more simpler. There's just two metrics to look at here: strikeout minus walk rate. So the things that pitchers can control, strikeouts, walks, it's my favorite indicator. It's extremely strong and small sample, so we're dividing the season up into smaller samples. So if you're improving, it's a good sign. And then Stuff Plus, another thing that's good in small samples. So looking quarter over quarter, hydration break over hydration break, who's improved in that time. And I think there's going to be some guys, maybe they're flying under the radar, and then some potential for some buy lows here, I think.
Yeah, no, I like it. I like it. So, yeah, I think at this time of the year, Steve, it's a couple things. One, it's tough to find trends that it feels like things can begin to feel stagnant. So I like this in terms of just targets or guys that, you know, might be under rostered in like some shallow leagues. But then on the flip side of it, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about a few shows ago, that some of these names, I mean, just to spoil a little bit, like a Sonny Gray, like if you're not rostering him, you're not really like deep diving. And I do think there's a ton of value mid season to just track what some of these changes are so that you kind of got the beat on what they're doing all season long.
Trade target, maybe, right? Like,
yeah,
you know,
for
like,
sure. Yeah, I think trade targets. I think
I didn't know, like, to again, like, I did not realize how good Sonny Gray has been in recent weeks.
Yeah,
just to,
yeah, totally agree. Yeah, just to keep my like wallowing going, there's also a few names here. I don't know about you that I rostered like early in the year and I've moved on from. I don't know if that's a theme, but I guess that's the life of being active on the wire and everything. So we'll be a lot of fun. We got tons of names. We ran long last time. So without further ado, we will jump in to a timeless WAF named Jack Flaherty. I will always say, fun fact, that was my first ever pitcherless gig, is the write-up on Jack Flaherty. Way back in like 2019.
He's in the word cloud. He's in the word cloud.
He is, for sure. And yeah, in recent years, you've kind of had to hold your nose and deal with the warts with Jack Flaherty. But he does have this tendency to be up and down. And since mid-May, he is definitely on the rise in eight starts with a 3.49 ERA and a 29% strikeout rate, a 4.8% walk rate. Steve, what have we seen differently from Jack Flaherty, and how do we feel about just the outlook here for a pitcher that is polarizing at best and usually pretty fringy compared to some of the names that are much more established that we'll talk about tonight?
I bet if we did this exercise for like every half of the season, so divided into quarters, like Flaherty would be on this list
one way or another.
Both ways.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting because, yeah, he's just a guy who goes on runs. I'll never forget that run in 2019. I had him in a keeper league, had him forever, loved him as a prospect. And I traded him after just essentially eating a full half of a 5 ERA, where we're just like, what? Jack Flaherty has this amazing stuff. He's just getting shelled every start, and then had like the best half that any starting pitcher has had. That's, you know, including like the Mizorowskis and Scooble, yeah, runs that have happened in recent years.
Yeah, not even, like, he was not that even good. Recent. I remember, yeah, some of the numbers he was putting up were like kind of all time baseball half.
Yeah, yeah, that, yeah, was it was that good. Like, he, I'm not saying he has that in him anymore. That was when he was in his prime and, you know, at the peak of his powers. That being said, Jack Flaherty has been pretty damn good since May 15th. It's an 8-game start, a 3.49 ERA, a 29% strikeout rate, like really, really good stuff. The biggest thing, at least, you know, change wise, is the fastball velocity. That's up to 94. He was at 91, 92 earlier in the season, and that makes a big difference, especially for a guy that doesn't have this overpowering stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, he ditched the sinker and changeup. Let's focus more on the fastball, which, that makes sense. The velocity's there. He's comfortable with it. He's throwing that more. He did tick up that usage a little bit in the last start, which was interesting. And, you know, just the fact that, hey, it's the biggest riser in strikeout minus walk rate. He was at 8.24%, like unusable territory, whereas 14% is league average for a starting pitcher. I could pull that up right now. Yeah. 15%, 15.5% is league average, for a starting pitcher. So, you know, there's, some hesitancy just because there is that up and down nature of Jack Flaherty, but the fact that he's throwing harder, you know, the things that he's controlling, the strikeouts and walks are in a good place. I streamed him this weekend. It was okay. It was five innings, five Ks, zero runs. I think he may have gotten a win. Pollock's still a little bit out. You know, the slider wasn't great that last start that I just talked about. Yeah. And the schedule coming up is tough, so I get it. But I'm kind of hoping he doesn't deal in one of those starts. And if he does, I'm going to try and scoop him back and roster him for the rest of the way, at least until, like, this is kind of like a, I don't know, is there a better term for like a higher upside Vargas rule? Like, I'm kind of just riding it out and hoping that this could last for a little bit. Like, yeah, as soon as I see the velocity drop, it's like, okay, that's it. He's not feeling great again. But I forget, Eno Saris just references this all the time. Like, pitchers go on hot streaks like hitters do. It's just how it manifests and how it shows itself is with velocity. So you can tell when guys are feeling good when they're throwing their hardest, and that's what Flaherty's doing right now.
Yeah, I like that. I know in the past and at, like you said, the peak of his powers, that was one of the first times I heard Nick kind of wax poetic about a pitcher being in rhythm. And I think it wasn't just that dominant second half. He carried it all through the next year. So it was really like a year and a half where he was just totally in rhythm. And I think that's kind of what you're saying with the hot streak, except velo is a more like objective way to show that. I think when you talk about vintage Flaherty, you think about the slider and that being such a weapon. And that's been a story of, like, you know, even just doing month over month, the Savant whiff rate on the slider in April was 26% and in June was 38%. So huge ticks. And then to your point, Steve, on the most recent start, that came all the way down to 25. So looked more like April than, you know, this second quarter, if we're going to call it that. So I think what you said is a great call out, that, like, that's one side of the coin. The other half is the four seam velocity, which is still up at that around 93.6, which is up from 92 and change. And that's an important tick, like we always talk about, when you're low 90s. So yeah, I think it's worth just keeping an eye on, but it wouldn't shock us. Flaherty is still just 30 years old. He's another guy that you just feel like what is he, 34, 35? No, he's 30 years old. He does have a lot of mileage. But yeah, the book's not fully written.
He's had strong second halves with Detroit, right? He's comfortable there. He's signed there. You know, he signed back there, right, after being traded to LA. I know last year he wasn't as good, and he was at Detroit. It was in Detroit the whole time there last year, if I remember that correctly. But if you remember, he had that extremely strong first half in 2024 and kind of looked like he was back, right? And the season in 2024 was great. He had a 30% strikeout rate, 5.9% walk rate. Like, it was kind of vintage Flaherty, and honestly, like, his best season overall, right?
Yeah,
like, pretty much. And he was at this 93.4. like, if he's back to that, you know, look out. The swing strike rate is suppressed from then. It was 13% that year. It's down to 11% this year. I'm going to try and pull up what his swing strike rate is. I should have added that to my little breakdown here, but I could let you riff while I look that up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the season line for Flaherty still looks very ho-hum with the 4.60 ERA, 1.45 whip. Like, he's 50% rostered. So, like, again, we're going to talk about a lot of names that are trade targets only. I think that makes Flaherty, because he's the very top of this list and he's had a mediocre season line, added to the fact that he's probably available in a lot of, like, 12-team leagues, I would put Flaherty on the watch list. So let's see, his next start is against the Phillies this weekend. That will be in Detroit. So that might be one to mark the calendars. Just see if he's available in your league, goes off. You know, that's supporting this trend that we're seeing of the biggest improver on K-BB. But That's kind of all I got, Steve.
let me pull it up here. His swing strike rate, interesting. So in the first half, it was in the first quarter, it was 9%. So I'd imagine that's going to improve a good amount from the middle of May to July 7th, where we're at. Yeah, he is at 12.6%. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, it is.
That's a really good sign. It's not the 13.5% he was at in 2024, but it's a lot closer to it. He's getting a lot more swings and misses. I mean, that makes sense since his strikeout rate is way up. But you know, encouraging stuff
for sure.
Jack Flaherty there.
Yeah, I think all the.
I'm kind of like, if you could swallow those that tough matchup, like I'm kind of in.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. He's scooped up in my league, but I would be feeling the same way. I know it's kind of like the hitter version of barrel rate, where you're like, oh, and the hard hit rate's gone up,
yeah,
and the barrels,
yeah,
like some of it is correlated. But if you look at from the Stav sheet you threw together, if you look at his pitching plus from first half to second half. 89 in the first half, 103 second half. So definitely making big improvements. A lot of it's from the velocity and ditching some of the pitches that aren't as effective that he kind of strangely brought back in on the most recent start. So I think it'll be a pretty telling start against the Phillies, honestly.
I
know,
and
it's
the Phillies
tough.
They're scary, but they've been kind of struggling a little bit. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but yeah. If you have the stones to throw Flaherty in that, like, more power to you.
Oh,
I hope
yeah.
he does well.
Yeah, I would just mark the calendar. Let's see the Phillies last 10. So they're 5-5 in the last 10. So they're kind of but good overall in the season. All right, next.
Yeah, they could hang a 15 on any team though.
Yes,
you know, so.
Indeed. Next up, we got Dustin May. We have talked about him a handful this season, but more cutter, less curve from Dustin May. It's kind of, you know, I know he's recovering from the injury through yesterday as we record, and people thought he was going to be on a pitch count of like 60 pitches through 81 pitches. It was a nice bounce back where he had 7 strikeouts and 4 2/3. But before that, we did see, I think it was like 15 earned runs over 3 starts. It mainly came from 2 big blowups, and I think it was the Braves game where he didn't even get out of an inning and gave up like 5 earned or something. So there was questions of like, oh, is, you know, was the breakout real, especially with the, you know, the kind of lingering injury. People are wondering if he's just been such a roller coaster, right, over the last 4 years. But he is pretty close to a top of the chart. Yeah, number 2 on this, where the first quarter of the season, a 10% rounding up strikeout minus walk rate. Second quarter of the season, 25% strikeout minus walk rate. So Dustin May, I'm in, Steve. I feel like that what we needed to see last start was there, but being in doesn't really matter as much for a guy that's, you know, the breakout has already happened. That said, I mean, he's still, after the blowups, I mean, he's pretty available, 29% rostered in Yahoo leagues. Talk to me about Dustin May and how you feel. He gets the Braves again on Saturday, the team that he got blown up by last time.
That should be much, much higher, that roster percentage. Dustin May looks much more like an exciting pitcher that we hoped that he was with the Dodgers at any point in his career since that, like, you know, that April where it looked like it's like, okay, you know, there was hype with him. And it's like, okay, Dustin Mays looks like he could potentially be a fantasy ace, right? Like, you know, all over pitching ninja with his, you know, ginger fro and everything like that.
Yep.
And, you know, that's saying, not saying much because it's been that bad since then. So the hype is like fully gone down. But, you know, we were excited about him in spring because the velocity looked back. That's held. You know, I know there were some tweaks after the first 2 starts, more cutter, and that sort of figured that out, you know, sort of with the bad fastball problem. But, you know, I think there were some injuries over the last two starts have kind of put a damp towel on this, but I've held through it and I'm excited. The Braves are a team that has been scuffling recently. I think in June they had one of the worst offenses in the league, so that's not too scary of a matchup. And that where he did get, you know, shelled versus them, it was a few bloop singles, a comebacker that hit him that made him leave the game. So that was as get bad as it can go. He didn't look as good as he did even in the last start where he just went 4 2/3 and had 5 strikeouts and was kind of on a pitch count. I would hope he's back to just being able to go a full 5-6 innings like he's been able to do. You know, he really hasn't had that. I know he had that one complete game, but I think he's been more of, I could be wrong here, but he's kind of been just a 6-inning guy. Yeah, I mean, he did have the 9-inning. He went 7 innings and, you know, had a stretch of 6 innings where he, like, didn't give up more than 3. We gave 4 runs once, but it was, like, a bunch of 3s and 2s. But, I mean, he's really been solid other than that Royal start where he gave up 6 runs in 2 innings, which I think he was pitching with the bad back. And then that Atlanta start, like we were just talking about, where he gave up those 5 runs in just 9 batters' face. But there was some thinking and dunking there, and he wasn't able to get himself out of that. But, you know, 7 strikeouts and 4 2/3 with the Brewers, like, you know, he looked really good again in his last start on Monday night.
I mean, his movement profiles, like, everything about him, I'm kind of shocked that Flaherty's more rostered than him, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I made that decision. You know, it wasn't even a thought in my mind to drop Flaherty instead of
Dustin May. Yeah,
instead of Flaherty. So
if we're keeping score throughout the show, Dustin May is pitcher number one who I had earlier this season and moved on. So you might need 2 hands to count on by the end of it. But let's talk about from Dustin to Justin here, Steve. Justin Robleski, he's had a number 3 on this list, jumped from a quarter 1 K-minus BB of 6% up to 18%. And Robleski has had a really, really promising, like, past few starts where he's getting volume as well. He's gone 7 innings, 7 innings, 6 innings. And his most recent one at the Athletics, 11 strikeouts. So that's definitely buoying this quite a bit. You had to go all the way back to May 10th when he had more than 5. Or I'm sorry, I guess there was a 9 strikeout against the Phillies in there. But for the most part, the K's have come in like 2 big starts. So elite control with just a sub 5% walk rate, that will definitely help on this exercise. But kind of another one here with the Dodgers factory that, you know, at age 25, we're still kind of coming to our opinions about Robleski. What have you been kind of seeing under the hood that's led to what's been a really promising run here in the month of June? 30 innings, a 2.64 ERA, 101 whip, and like I said, at least the one really big strikeout outing.
Yeah, Robleski was kind of a guy that I just ignored, and maybe wrongfully so, as just someone that I thought was this guy that was just getting good results based on contact, kind of like a, you know, like Davis in Chicago, you know, like someone that I just had paid no attention to. Like, yeah, he's getting good results, but he's doing nothing that I
Palante like. Or something. Yeah, just like a pitch to contact guy.
He's a pitch to contact that's just getting, you know, good results from Koufax, as Knicks would say, and the baseball gods. But I think there is some stuff going on here that has me intrigued. You know, I know we will get into it in the second portion of this show, but his stuff went from 92, which is like bottom of the barrel, worst in the league type of stuff, to 98, which is closer to, it's not great, but it's still closer to average. He's a strike thrower. He has command. It's been a 115 location plus in both in a 108 location plus in the first quarter, 115 in the second quarter. Like, he's a command artist. That's some of the best stuff in best locations in the league. He's getting more swings and misses too. It's up to a, you know, palatable 10%, where in the first quarter it was at just 7% swing strike. That's really, really bad. And how he's doing that, you know, the velocity is improving. Like, leave it to the Dodgers to find to go like both ways, you know, like harness like these guys with all this crazy stuff and velo and like Roki Sasaki, another guy we'll talk about in a little bit, and make them pitchers and give them the tiny bit of command that they need to do, and then go the other way as well, right? Find this guy who just has middling stuff, just throw strikes, and now they're able to get the best out of him. Like this reminds me of like, you know, like peak, like Michael, like peak, like Michael Wacha, peak, like, you know, Seth Lugo, like guys that could just throw strikes, don't have overpowering stuff, but end up being really good and sort of are overlooked to start. And I'm definitely guilty of it. You know, there's nothing that's going to light up the pitching ninja, things like that, or any of the stuff metrics, you know, or the red lines on Savant or anything like that. But, you know, he's throwing harder now, throws strikes, is a lefty with, what, how many pitches does he throw? 7 pitches. You know, it's really interesting here. And I think that the Dodgers have kind of gotten the best results out of yet another pitcher here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just for a 25-year-old Dodger starting pitcher, we have to pay attention when he pops up on a list like this. It is still surprising to me because I agree with everything you're saying, that like the stuff we normally look at, whether it's the velo or the extension, or yes, he throws 7 pitches, but a lot of them are kind of show me pitches. It nothing really pops, to your point. But there's some interesting things beyond just like trust the Dodgers, that, like you said, the velo, the high floor of the location. And then at least recently in June, kind of cut back on the slider usage and increased usage of all those other show me pitches. So yeah, he's one that you just have to like continue to monitor. I am surprised that he's like 80% rostered compared to a 29% Dustin May. Like,
he's been on a pretty, pretty good run. Sure. And like, he's kind of doing it for since, like, there was a spell there in mid-May where you have 7 runs, 2 runs, 5 runs.
Right.
In 3 starts. But hey, the 7 runs, if you remember that game, it was an 8 2/3. I think it was, you know, it like the Scorigami NFL account, like that was a Scorigami account, you know, line for pitchers, and the 8 2/3, 7 hits, 7 runs, 7 strikeouts, yeah, and just 1 walk.
Well, if you're,
so it's just such a weird,
to be fair,
stretch that was.
Yeah, if you're game logging it, it's like he had a 9 strikeout outing end of May against the Phillies. So people probably were like, oh, it's a Dodger who just struck it. And then ever since then, while he hasn't blown the doors off until the last start, the run prevention's been good enough that it's probably
he's been
gradually
usable.
Growing. So, yeah, that's Robleski. I think, reasons to be interested in any of those guys. Flaherty, Dustin May, Robleski.
Give me a ranking on those 3.
I mean, in terms of ones that I would want to roster, I think I would go May, Robleski, Flaherty. In a vacuum, yeah. I mean, I would feel better going into like the playoffs in my league with Dustin May than Robleski personally. But I know that doesn't agree with kind of what the industry and the roster rate is saying. What do you think?
I think I would lean Robleski just based on team context.
Whoa, you know. Now, Steve, you're talking about the card. I'm kidding. But good defense.
Yeah,
good,
that's true. That's true. They've done some nice things this year, and they're not as bad a team they've been. It's probably more of a toss up. I hate to just waffle and not pick a side.
But Flaherty third for you.
Yeah. Flaherty third for sure. I feel like maybe May has the highest like upside in a strange way. Like, I believe May's strikeout rate more so than
Robleski's. Yeah.
Than Robleski's.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Because it's, they've seemed like anomalies in a way. But yeah, okay. We got a lot more names to get through. So we're going to take our first ad break and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, this is a group that has some more established names year over year. And we teased it at the top of the show, but Sonny Gray, who is historically a roller coaster pitcher year over year, hard to kind of nail down exactly what he's going to do. He's got like a kitchen sink arsenal. And at age 36, I feel like you and I know I was, were just kind of out, you know, I'll shop somewhere else at that stage of the draft. But he's putting in a nice season with a 2.61 ERA, 1.10 WHIP, and he is number four on this chart from first quarter K minus BB of 9.5% up to 21% in the second quarter. And yeah, Sonny Gray is he's doing the thing really, where the last month he's got a 1.62 ERA, a 0.87 WHIP, 3-0 and 38 strikeouts over 33 innings. So now's the time where we dig deep and figure out what the mad scientist is doing differently, because it seems like he's one of the bigger tinkerers year over year, which is like, oh, he's throwing this pitch way more, this pitch way less. So what are you seeing this year and the second quarter specifically for Sonny Gray?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I'll bump out that sample just to the middle of May of his last 55 innings, a 2.26 ERA, 28% strikeout rate, 7% walk rate, 3.30 Sierra. So like, you know, all the things that you want to see, 104 stuff plus, 12% swing strike rate. That's up from an 8% swing strike rate, a 4.56 Sierra in the first quarter, and just a 9.4% strikeout minus walk rate. Interesting, his stuff was still above average at 101, so kind of maybe just dealing with some of that ebbs and flow of feeling it and being in, locked in that Nick says, and just being in the zone type of thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, it is a new team and you have to get used to it, and you know, I know the AL East isn't the easiest place to pitch in, and Sonny Gray's dealt with issues and pitching at certain places, really only with the Yankees. He's been pretty much elite
everywhere,
really
else.
Good everywhere else. So maybe that shouldn't come as a surprise, but I don't know. I think it was more of just surprise. Wait, Sonny Gray's been that good over the last, you know, two months. I think you know, he's probably going to be maybe a trade candidate in real life, and should be a trade candidate in fantasy leagues. Like, he's kind of, you know, he's 36, going to be 37 and by the end of this year, in November, by the end of the calendar year. Has two more years left at, you know, a reasonable AAV, like $25 million. Like,
yeah, that's a great point.
That, you know, if the Red Sox are fully out of it, that's a really, really good asset. Although I know sometimes guys with that much term don't get moved, or they do less and less these days, just because they cost a good amount. But yeah, Sonny Gray's quietly putting together a really good season here. And maybe it was because that first quarter was pretty bad. It is covered up, like his you see, hey, yeah, the 10% swing strike rate is down from you know, the 12% last year, but it's much more in line over the last quarter as he got comfortable here with Boston. So I think this is a good player and an interesting buy, and someone that has kind of snuck up on how good he's been recently.
Yeah, I think if you're kind of breaking down the month over month, what jumps out to me is the sweeper usage has ratcheted up from 16% in April up to 27% in July. And it makes sense. I mean, it's the simplest analysis that we do, where it's like throw the good pitches better. Mm-hmm. But that's one that it was like in the month of May, it had .045 batting average against. So in June, he cranked it up. It's still a sub 100 batting average. And his one start in July looked really effective as well. So it's now, like, don't cite the Wascar Ynoa rule, but it's his top thrown pitch of, like we said, the six that he throws. I mean, unlike, was it Robleski we were just talking about? The Sonny Gray actually goes to all those pitches almost equally.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, just imagine being a batter and having, you know, worse than a coin flip chance of kind of guessing what you're about to see. So even at 36, I like it, Steven, with the just the possibility of a trade to get into a better pitching ballpark or a team context is interesting. So I would probably be open to rolling the dice. It kind of feels like a dance with the devil or deal with the devil type of thing, just because I feel like over the years, Sonny Gray has kind of built us up to let us down at times. But you're right. When you look at the season line, it usually ends up one way or another, like looking like what you invested on draft day. Yeah. So,
yeah,
I think that's a good one there. Next, finally, somebody who I can be excited to say that I'm rostering, and it's Yuri Perez, who is he's on the word cloud.
This is my Luis Lara, dude.
Oh,
this is
gosh.
My Luis Lara.
Yeah. I know you dealt him in a trade, right?
No, I just dropped him.
Well, to be fair,
I didn't have the IL spot.
One of the weirder player reports. I remember when he had that thigh injury, there were reports saying it would be like 10 weeks before he was on a mound.
8 to 10 weeks was the initial report.
And I think he was like, he did his minor stint at like a 5 week mark. It was just bizarre, but
if that, it was like more like four.
Yeah. That
and it just so happened. The guy I had Brent Rooker in a roster spot, in an IL spot. And you know, he had a sore knee and played and came back and then was IL'd, and all of a sudden, okay, he's going for season ending surgery. That's just the way it goes in fantasy. Like, you have to react to the news that you have. Like, I was in the luxury of being in a spot to hold a guy on the IL in my active roster. Like, I need to scrap for every category, unfortunately, with the way my season started in this one particular league.
Yeah.
And it just sort of is what it is. And, like, of course, like, you know, he looked the best that he did in the game he got hurt.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, three innings or something. Yeah. No, and he's looked really good. I mean, in his three starts from since returning, I mean, obviously the one that hit the news was that he got yanked early on a perfect game, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous. I hate to see it. But for the purpose of this show, 17 innings over those three starts, 17 strikeouts, 109 ERA, 0.53 whip. This is the version that we were investing at pick 80, saying my bold prediction of like, oh, it could be a Cy Young guy. So honestly, shocking that he found his quote unquote rhythm, like a theme of our show tonight, coming straight off of an injury and honestly bookending the injury. Cause like you said, it looked like it finally clicked. But it's encouraging nonetheless, in terms of what he's been doing. I mean, the sweeper use is up a little bit. The four-seamer has gradually come down throughout the season, which, yeah, I mean, he had some home run stuff with that early on in April, but the sweeper and the slider have been really effective. I mean, he hasn't given up. He's thrown the sweeper like 60 times since he's been back and has not given up a single hit with it. So, like, he definitely looks locked in from that standpoint. So, not sure you'd have to pry him away from any manager that's kind of dealt with the journey of this season, but just worth noting that Yuri Perez is doing something that we might be talking about throughout the offseason, right?
Yeah, it just seems like there's going to be, like, he's going to probably go in the same area, if not higher, as a pitcher, just with how he's going and how it looks like he's going to finish the season. And what's even more encouraging is because if you bump that out, he's been back for what, two starts, right?
I think three.
Okay, three. So it's nice because the sample size from May 15th is six starts. So there's three more starts where he's had a 31% strikeout rate and a 7% walk rate. Even if in those first two starts, you know, I know he was great in the start that he got hurt, but those last two starts, there was good numbers under the hood, despite the results being okay to bad, right? I don't think there was anything too amazing in those last two starts before he got hurt. So, you know, the stuff's always like this, like he's, I don't have in front of me, but he's probably top 10 in stuff, if not top five, if not top three, overall. That's never been a question. It's just been the location. He hasn't figured out how to quote pitch. I know it's a cliche, but he really hasn't. Like, and you watch him, and there were just times on the mound where like he seemed baffled and like gave like that Aroldis Chapman smile. It's like, why are you smiling, dude? You just gave up three home runs. Like, you know, after Chapman gave up the home run to Altuve in the ALCS and whatever 2019, right? It's like it's maybe how some guys show frustration. You know, he has the tools to do it, and it seems like he's finally clicked. It was only a matter of time. It's just odd that it's come around this injury, and he's seemingly figuring out how to, you know, mix his arsenal together. I'm curious. I don't have in front of me like what his pitch mix has done. I don't know if you hit on that. While I was looking
just
at some other
just
stuff.
The sweepers ramped up, the four seamers come down. Just in his most recent one, the slider. So he's throwing breaking stuff more, which is great. And to your point on stuff, so far just scanning, the only name I can see that is higher than him is Mizorowski, and at least in the second quarter, Chris Sale. And I laughed out loud, Steve, because I did a command F on Perez. And I was like, how is he only like 90 on stuff plus? It was Martin Perez, not.
Different. And like also like just going back to like the learning how to pitch and development thing. Like I think we've talked about too. Maybe Nick's talked about it. Maybe, you know, Saris has talked about it. Like Perez's stuff is so good in the minors that he literally just, what does he have to do to like dominate? Like, throw it around the zone and guys are either going to chase because they don't have the plate discipline or just not be able to hit it just because they're not as talented. So like he's never had to do that because his stuff is just that good. Whereas some other guys need to, like, you know, even like guys like Cam Schlittler, like they come up, they don't, like they develop velocity over time, develop their stuff over time. Like they need to get by before they have that stuff as they're refining it. Yuri Perez has just always been better than everybody else until he's gotten to the majors, and then his stuff wasn't enough just to get by, right? Because guys can hit 102 with Rod on the top of the zone if, you know, that's obvious what you're going to throw. So, you know, it we've seen this plenty of times with guys that have this sort of stuff. You know, we talk about it all the time, how, you know, guys like Carlos Rodon and Chase and Corbin Burns have this amazing stuff, come up as prospects, and like are the league leaders on the reverse sorted ERA, right? In the year before, and then come back and lead the league in ERA then the following year. Like, it happens all the time, or more often than you think. And Yuri Perez sort of is someone that I think is going to get there one way or the other, and it's probably happening already. It's why we were so hyped about him in the offseason.
Could not agree more. And honestly, I feel like it's been enough of a pattern since we've done this show that I think a new formula, I know we've cited it as like the Dylan Cease before, but the new formula is like, go around pick 100, figure out which guy has the 10 to 11, 12% walk rate, and everything else looks amazing, because that's how Mizorowski popped. That's what Yuri Perez is doing right now. Like, the only difference on the stat line from first half to second half, because his stuff, his location plus, his pitching plus, it all looks identical. It's that the walk rate has gone from 12% to 6%, and the strikeout rate has gone up. So I know there's obviously tinkering and everything, but yeah, it seems like it's a pattern. There's been a lot of those guys over the years. And yeah, I mean, for Perez, it's also just a bonus that the Marlins are no longer negative. It's actually the opposite, that like he's starting to get win potential. Like, they're a wild card team. Like, they are scrappy. So it's more upside even rest of the way than I think we might have thought we had going in, because it's like, oh yeah, he's going to top out at 10 wins or something. So yeah, that's Yuri Perez. Exciting there. Next kind of grab bag we got here, Steve, because some of these names, you know, we don't have time for all of them, but Joe Ryan has looked really good. He's a name that is kind of set it and forget it when he's on a roster. So we haven't talked about him a ton on this show, but eight strikeouts or more in his six of his last nine starts. One that jumped out to me is Foster Griffin, just because I feel like he was kind of warning signs of like fake news. I guess you could say the same about Cade Cavalli, who is in this group as well, but both of these guys are near the top of the list on risers. So Joe Ryan is right after Yuri Perez, Chase Burns, Cade Cavalli, Foster Griffin, and then Braxton Ashcraft is another one that we loved coming into the offseason. He's adding velocity. He's been great all season, but excellent in the second quarter. And then Sean Burke, man, Cavalli and Sean Burke are the two more for counting that I moved on from. But Sean Burke really stings because he was one that was like 2% rostered. And
were we on him last year too? We were definitely in on him this offseason as well.
And
that's painful.
Even after the season started, it was like he's on the extension team as well. And he's like,
you know, they did some things with openers with him, right? So that's frustrating, right? Because he's not starting, you know, but
then he looks
really good.
Yeah, the month of June, 35 Ks and 27 innings. So, he's an interesting one for this exercise because it called out that his walk rate actually doubled from the first quarter to the second quarter. So if you're topping the K minus BB risers and your walk rate doubled, the deductive reasoning there is you are like striking out the yard, which is what's happened. He's gone from a 20% strikeout rate up to 31%. So definitely an exciting name long-term, but any of these guys that you want to punch in on and talk a bit more about.
We'll focus on Burke a bit. You know, the swing strike rate, rose as well accompanying that. You'd expect that when he's got a 31% strikeout rate and in those last seven starts and 50 innings, it's a 12.7% swing strike rate. That's up from 8%. So that's really good. The 10% walk rate, I think that, you know, just shows that maybe he's in a bit over his head. But I mean, the Sierra is only 3.45 compared to the 3.04 ERA he's got in the last 50 innings. And again, that's not going to truly matter, I guess, when you're striking out 31% of the time, but that he's on a Dylan Street stretch for 30 innings. The issue is, Cease has shown that he can hold that for that long. If he reverts back to his 20% strikeout rate and the walk rate doesn't subside, like, that's trouble.
But I don't know that it will, because the four-seamer, I think he's just growing into a completely different pitcher in the middle of the season, which is nuts. That, like, it kind of stands to logic that if you were to decide that you're now a strikeout pitcher as opposed to pitch to contact, that's how you kind of, your pitch count gets up. You might miss your spot a few times on, like, a full count. You might walk more guys, but the four-seamer, really the velocity across the board, but like the cutter, the four-seamer.
96 on the four-seamer, throwing the cutter more.
It's jumped almost
the schedule looks
picks.
Great coming up. Like, there's really, I'm probably picking too much nits with Burke here.
Jumping two miles per hour in the middle of the season is crazy. And
no joke.
So I think.
You take that trade-off, right? You take that trade-off.
Yeah. And for a 6'6" guy, like, I'm buying on Burke. Real quick, I want to look because he's been doing it, but when he was somewhat established early on in the season and he was just like 4% rostered. And by somewhat established, I mean, he was getting good results, just no strikeouts. Okay. So he's 58% rostered. I think that number needs to go up.
That's fair.
But
I don't disagree.
You're right that there's some, you know, you're toeing the line when you're at a 10 plus strikeout rate, if it does come back. So all fair there. Any other names from this group, Steve, that you want to talk about? I know we got a list of the stuff plus improvers as well.
Maybe just a shout out to Foster Griffin and how good he's been, over the last 50 days, last 50 innings. He's been, 52 innings of a 25% strikeout rate, just a 3.9% walk rate. So kind of that perfect pairing of, like, you know, above average strikeout rate, elite walk rate, and been really good. So props to the Nats. Like, he's a guy that came over from, you know, overseas and had these amazing numbers that we dreamed on with, you know, Cody Ponce and things like that. And it's come to fruition. I don't think we were that in on Foster Griffin, to be honest, but he's the kind of guy that's done it. So shout out to him.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good call. I'm trying to think of a profile, like maybe even like a, how we were interested in Jordan Montgomery years back, like where it's just
that's
like,
a good one. That's a good one. That's a good
you're,
one.
You're you got good command. The K's are okay. Yeah. The K minus BB looks good. But yeah, one thing that looked interesting on his month over month stuff is like the spin rates on a lot of his stuff have gone up. And
he's a lefty too, so I like that.
The J-Mont, yeah, and the
throws 92. Yeah, this is Jordan Montgomery.
Adding a little bit of velocity. The sweeper has been kind of a strikeout pitch for him in recent months. And like, yeah, if you look at, I guess he had kind of the loud April, and that's when everybody was wondering if it's legit. But it's been nice to see the strikeouts kind of outpace the innings pitched month over month. Mm-hmm. And I think those are some of those small tweaks at adding velo and getting more spin. So, yeah, for a guy that, he's a late bloomer here, like you said, just like coming over. But with the Nationals and everything we've talked about all season with the front office and changes, I think he is graduating from being just a guy, really, to like being worthy. So I want to check his. He's had good results though, so it's got to be 80%. So he's up there on the roster.
He's been doing this for a bit now, probably even larger than the sample that we're looking at.
Yep,
just over quarter over quarter.
Okay, well, the last bit of our show, we're looking at stuff plus improvers and some names that made both lists, which makes sense. But we're gonna take our second ad break, and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve. Got time for a few more names here, but worth shouting out quickly that Braxton Ashcraft, Cade Cavalli, Chase Burns were all on both the Stuff Plus improver list and also the K-minus BB that we talked about. But then some different names that we haven't talked about as much. Emmett Sheehan is another guy who has kind of had a frustrating look to the year where it's like we were all excited when we came into the season. We weren't positive about the role. Then he was getting some of the volume, but the results weren't there. Still has been frustrating on like back of the baseball card here, where June he had a 6 ERA and a 1.33 whip. But his last start was better with 5 strikeouts and 4 1/3. Just gave up 1 earned run. So for Emmett Sheehan, 26 years old, he's kind of been a industry, maybe not an industry darling, but definitely like a
industry sleeper target. Plus, target.
What do we make of Sheehan here popping up on the Stuff Plus model? And do you think with the Dodgers factor, there's room to be interested? Still 76% rostered. So like the people are holding the faith, but what do we make of this?
Yeah, 95 Stuff Plus in the first quarter to 105. It's the biggest gain. I'm pretty much in. I think this is a like probably the biggest buy low on this list here. The velocity back up, like the stuff's kind of like why we've been intrigued of him as a prospect. Like the fastball looks good. There's been more changeup versus lefties that Nick brought up. Some of the results have been pretty bad for him. But there's also been some really good starts. There's an 8 strikeout outing. There's a 7 strikeout outing. Another 8 strikeout outing there. You know, this kind of reminds me of like, okay, Dustin May's had a few bad starts, made some tweaks, and is starting to figure it out. He was really good to start the season too, if I remember correctly. That 10 strikeout game versus the Cubs. Gave up a bit of homers early on to sort of suppress that excitement, but their strikeout upside here, the fact that his stuff is improving from when he showed those results and those strikeouts has me encouraged. The velocity being back up, flirting with 96, has me encouraged, right? That was sort of the thing on him in the early season. Like, he came out, whoa, Emmett Sheehan's throwing 98, and then by like the third, fourth inning, he was back down to like 95. Then people were excited because he was holding 96 into later innings, and it looks like he may be starting to do that again. Mm-hmm. And that, again, that's sort of start how like just the story of young pitchers trying to figure it out. Like, he clearly doesn't have the stuff that Yuri has, but similar sort of arc and story that could be told for Sheehan. And I would definitely be buying low. The Diamondbacks, I'm interested in that next start. Then it's at home versus the Phillies. That's a little bit tougher. That's at Philadelphia. Those are his start before the break. Is home versus the Diamondbacks. I'd be in for that. And who knows, like, out of the break, maybe they shuffle that up. You know, they could maybe push him a day or two, or you know, have him come back out towards the back end of the rotation, things like that. The things that teams do through the All-Star break to sort of limit innings of guys. So we'll see. But Emmett Sheehan, I'm pretty interested in. Cool to see that the stuff is rising. Yeah. I think the results should follow.
Yeah. I think the not being a pitch expert, but I'd have to imagine the curveball is a big piece of that story, because the spin rate has gone up almost like 1,000 RPM.
He got a lot more whiffs recently in recent starts,
100. Yeah, 100 RPM. But that's not nothing. And he's gained like 3 miles per hour on the curveball as well. He's throwing it more. Yeah. It's got above average swing and miss stuff. So, yeah, I think Sheehan, like you said, Steve, it's put it really well that he's a great buy low, especially for managers who might be thinking like, oh, he's been frustrating all season. He's had good a couple good starts. Let me sell high. So, like that one. Moving over to Roky Sasaki, who, yeah, we're kind of on a Dodgers roll here.
Dodger show.
Yeah. But Roky is the ultimate roller coaster. And finally, in May, where he had a good month and a 3.18 ERA, June, the results kind of came back down to earth, and his most recent start was a struggle. But he tops this, or number two on this list, with first quarter stuff of 105, second quarter stuff 113. Is Roky a buy low, or is it just such a like mystery box kind of grenade that you don't want to invest? He, unlike Sheehan, is more available at just 35% rostered in Yahoo League. So probably out there in like 12 teamers. What do we make of Sasaki?
Yeah, it's much more of a hold your nose sort of mm-hmm. buy low. And I think one that has much more potential for blow ups, right? Like, you can even see it in the last few starts. Like, yeah, he's had some games where he had 6 runs, 10 strikeouts, 7 innings, 10 strikeouts, 5 innings, 2 runs, 6 Ks. But then there's the 3-homer game that happens, you know, like his last start, and he's gone after 3 innings. Yeah. You know, it's going to be volatile. I don't think it's fully there yet, but it's encouraging. You know, home versus Colorado, yes, I'm in for the next start. If his start after that and the All-Star break is at New York, probably not. Yeah. That being said, like, he also could have a good start versus Colorado, versus the Yankees. This is probably, you're probably going to be one of these guys that's like, okay, yeah, you probably got by streaming with Roky Sasaki. And then, like, you'd look back at game logs, like, well, you started him versus, you know, the Padres and he got rocked. And then you benched him versus the Yankees and he shoved. Yeah. Like, it makes no sense. That's one of those things frustrating. But the fact that velocity is up, he's like figured out what splitter he's throwing. He broke that into a forkball and a splitter. The splitter he throws a bit harder. He's focusing on that more. You know, there has been a bit more slider in recent outings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of like in May, like a pitch that he really didn't throw a few starts, and now it's been consistently around like a, you know, 20% of the time, which is good because now he's got 3 pitches to offer. you know, it's more of like a gyro slider. Like if you look at the pitch movement profile on Savan, it's like, you know, one of those, you know, zero close to like a death ball type of movement profile. Hmm. But it is distinct from the split. So, that's nice. And then the fastball, you know, he has to play off that. So there's still work to be done, but it's encouraging that the stuff is improving. And, yeah. I could be talked into, you know, Sasaki's like a kind of guy, if you make a trade for a hitter and are giving up a pitcher, it's like, all right, try and get Sasaki back. It may not be as bad of a fall off as you would think, sort of thing in a trade.
I think he's, I know it's not as impactful for rest of season, but I think these changes and like what he's done this season at just 24 years old, like the big picture for Sasaki, I'm still like interested. You know what I mean? Whether it's, I don't know if
for
you could
sure.
hold
like this
in the
guy,
dynasty,
he was,
but like he's a great sleeper target next year.
He's a great buy in dynasty, and I don't think he should be available. Like,
yeah.
He was so good in MPV and like, you know, I think he won like their Cy Young award or one of the, you know, was contender for it.
Yeah.
He had 98 perfect game
throws, 98, 7 feet of extension, the splitter. I mean, really everything that we could say about the Roki Sasaki experience kind of feels like it comes down to like, can you trust the splitter? Like, is it on or not? Because like on the good stretches he's had, it's like, okay, this gets a ton of whiffs. Nobody can touch it. And then you look at like the next outing and it's like, oh, nope, it gave up a homer. It got crushed.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, everybody talks about how much that's a feel pitch. And I feel like you just live that with him. It, like the funny part about Sasaki, when you were talking about him, he feels like the guy, and he, maybe you know this type, when you're like in the playoffs and it's Friday and you're like chasing innings and you're like, okay, Sasaki's out there. Do I want to put my whole season on the line with a lotto ticket? And just, and like you said, it's probably one of those that you could throw the matchup out, because
at the window.
He's going to stump you one way or another.
Yeah. And I think we're spoiled with these guys that come over from Japan, because either they're like going over there to, you know, as a reclamation process and like as a image rehab and like, you know, figuring things out in a secondary league. That I don't mean that in a, you know, in a negative connotation or anything like that. Yeah. Or there are these guys that come over after they've been pitching there for 6, 7, 8 years as finished, polished pros that know how to pitch and attack guys. Like, but there's also still like Tatsuya Imai is that, and like look at the struggles he's dealing with. Like, you know, night in and night out dealing with different mounds and, you know, alternating amazing starts versus, you know, the worst starts you could ever imagine, and figuring that out. So there's a lot to go on with that. I know this is Sasaki's second year, but there's still a bit of a learning curve.
Yeah. It's a different size ball. I mean, it's just like there's real like, things that go into it, right?
How high do you still think the ceiling is for Sasaki? Like, do you think he has SB1 upside?
Yeah, man. At age 24. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Like when you think about guys in the past that have built us up to let us down, and like, if Lucas Giolito can struggle for 4 or 5 years and then have a season or two where he's SP1, like he has the tools to where I think he still could be an SP1. Like, would you be shocked at all given 2 more full seasons if he's just, it doesn't seem like it will take that much for him to unlock something, which is why he's such a buzzworthy name. But yeah, I think still SP1. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. Maybe not like top 5 pitcher, but I definitely think he can crack into like a top 20, top 15 arm.
Yeah,
for sure.
It just seems like some of those breakouts these days, like, and not even these days, like even who was the one? Corbin Burnes on the Brewers. Yeah. Like, remember there were times where it was like, oh, he's got like a 7 ERA. Why were people hyped about him? And then you make some adjustments.
We talked about filtering by the walk rate and the low ERA, the high ERA guys and guys that break out. Yeah.
Yeah. He might be in that zone and you don't have to get him at pick 100. So, all right. From the rest of the stuff plus list. So we talked about, just the fact that Ashcraft, Burnes, were in this group, Kate Cavalli. Mm-hmm. The other ones are much more like established SP1-2s of Logan Gilbert, Chris Sale, yeah. Drew Rasmussen.
Drew Rasmussen established SP1, yeah.
Yeah, now I know, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
So that's been a good roster all year. But I guess some names that jump out at the bottom of this, Steve, are like Chad Patrick, Ryan Weathers, Taj Bradley, that aren't your set it and forget it SP1-2 types. Do we want to just punch in on one or two of those before we wrap here?
Yeah, I'm good to punch in on one or two. Chad Patrick's interesting, but he's not, you know, he's not starting. So, he has the 50 innings in each quarter to qualify. So that's interesting there.
Okay.
And leave it to the Brewers to, you know, who knows, watch Chad Patrick be like a impactful second half starting pitcher for the Brewers. Like, how many games has he started on this? I think he's done one in the second quarter here. Yeah. Like, how many starts does he have on the year? Six
starts. He had none in June or July. He had a couple in May. So yeah, maybe we'll leave him out. We talked about him last year as well. It's just like an interesting name and trust the Brewers. But how about Ryan Weathers, because he's been on the WAF word cloud and we haven't talked about him recently. Weathers, of course, pops up on this list. He is number, let's see, about 10, I think, where first quarter of 99, second quarter 102. When you look at
10th,
what he's been up to for the calendar year, it does not look like it's on the rise, right? With April, it was April and May, really, he was low threes, mid threes ERA, respectable whip. And in June and July, across those six starts, it's been pretty miserable for Weathers. So I think it's probably worth, you know, a guy that is less than 50% rostered and being dropped in leagues, worth assessing to see, like, what are the changes he's making? Do we buy it? Because he's a name kind of like, I'm trying to think of who we were talking about, like Emmett Sheehan, like in that kind of ballpark, Braxton Ashcraft, where like you get around pick 200 and beyond and people are like, oh, take a shot on Weathers. So let's dive in, Steve. What do you think on Weathers?
It's interesting just because Weathers, like, you looked at him and you saw, like, you know, I know Lance Brzezinski wrote him up for last year, this year. It's like the lefty's throwing 96, 97. You know, the only thing is he's just never stayed healthy, and now he kind of is healthy. He's throwing 96, not 97. The swing strike rate isn't what it was in the 40 inning sample from last year when we were super interested. It's 11.3%, so still pretty good. The 27% strikeout rate and 7% walk rate on the year is really impressive and something that I just want to roster, overall. In the second quarter, it's been 47 innings of a 5.51 ERA, but it's a 3.75 Sierra, a 17.6% walk rate, and a better stuff plus than he had in the first half. And he's got a good location too. Like, honestly, with Weathers, the only thing I'm sort of concerned about is the fact that, you know, he's approaching uncharted territories with the innings here. Like, if he was this guy that had a track record and was just doing this and had sort of the disappointing, you know, ERA that starts with a 4 and a 125 whip, I'd be all in on this guy as a buy low. The only thing that's hesitant is that he is literally, with his next start, going to have the most innings he's pitched in the major leagues. Wow. With since 2021, when he threw 94 innings, he's at 92 innings now.
Yeah, and the velocity on his last start did dip on the fastball altogether down to 95.6, whereas all through June it was 96.2. So, like, that's a concerning trend. On the flip side, I like that his sweeper is probably factoring into the stuff plus, because getting a ton more spin on that. Mm-hmm. Really good whiff pitch. Like, yeah, there's tools here. And I guess for a guy that's being dropped in a lot of leagues, you know, pitching for the Yankees, has kind of, you know, four or five pitches that he goes to. Like if the, in,
the Yankees
if the durability,
need him, man. Like,
yeah,
like,
right, right.
Like Rodon is out for how long now? Like we don't need that multiple weeks. Mm-hmm. Max Fried is like just throwing a bullpen session and potentially going on a rehab start soon. You know, Clark Schmidt's out for the year. Like, or you know, he had internal brace in July of last year, so maybe he can contribute in a bullpen role in the back end of this season. Like, they kind of need him. Like what I thought in my head is like, okay, are they gonna like phantom IL him around the All-Star break and potentially give him some more break, more a longer stint there to sort of recover? But I don't know, man. They kind of need him.
Yeah. So, I mean, take a peek if he's out on your wire, but he does have the Nationals in Washington next, which is not what you want. But for all those reasons we listed, I think, you know, we're still at the halfway mark of the season. Like, it would be against the run of play to throw a soccer term in, Steve, and wrap us up for Weathers to have a bigger second half than his first half, just because of the durability that you talked about. But the K minus BB is, there's a reason why that's valuable. And when it comes with everything else that Weathers has, like, I think this is, it's a very good buy low target. Who is the other buy low that we were talking about?
Sheehan.
Yeah. I think Sheehan and Weathers are really interesting.
Yeah,
for this exercise. So, anybody else, Steve, or we good to put a pin in it? There is.
I think we can wrap.
Okay.
End it there.
Yeah. Well, that's part two of the first quarter, second quarter risers. I do feel like this is the first year that we've done it in this format, Steve. And I liked what you said at the start of last episode, that it feels so native to like the WAF mission statement, that we should look back at this one and make it an annual show, because very fun talking through these changes and not as easily scannable as some of the stuff we normally look at. So that does wrap us up, though. We'll be back next week. Hopefully you guys can ride the wave on some of these names or keep the watch list rolling. But until next week, that's it for episode 220. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.